Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Thursday, September 12th. I'm Peter Biello. On today's episode, Georgia state lawmakers say they will consider new gun policies next session. Some schools boost precautions following threats made on social media. And preservationists say several buildings in Macon are in need of what they call intensive care. These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. Georgia State House Speaker says lawmakers will consider new policies next year after a school shooting killed four people at Northeast Georgia's Appalachee High School. The changes could include increasing student access to mental health care, encouraging people to store guns safely, and information sharing among schools, police, and health professionals. But Republican John Burns' proposals today stop short of Democratic demands. They include universal background checks and a mandate to safely lock up guns, as well as a red flag law that would allow the state to temporarily take guns from someone in crisis. Threats made on social media continue to rattle Georgia schools. Atlanta public schools were under heightened security today, and several Atlanta private schools also received warnings about potential violence. APS sent out an alert to parents about the unspecified threats last night. In Northwest Georgia's Rome, the police chief, Denise Downer McKinney, addressed parents' concerns about a high school lockdown last week.
The threats are not a joke. And we've got to let our children know that they are not a joke and that we have no tolerance for anyone threatening to harm our students, faculty, or staff.
The threats in Atlanta prompted some parents to keep their children out of school for the day. Norfolk Southern has fired its CEO for having an inappropriate relationship with a subordinate. The departure ends 2 years of on-the-job turmoil for CEO Alan Shaw and comes days after the company's board announced it was investigating his alleged ethical lapses. Shaw was leading the Atlanta-based railroad last year when one of its trains derailed, causing the country's worst railroad disaster in the last decade. Norfolk Southern said yesterday its chief financial officer, Mark George, has taken over as CEO. Current and former residents of public housing developments in Georgia are demanding improved living conditions. As GPB's Sophie Gratis reports, many of them showed up at the Atlanta headquarters of the Department of Housing and Urban Development last week.
Diana Brown, a caregiver from Albany, says she's been asking for years that HUD address poor conditions, including mold, faulty amenities, and overall disrepair affecting senior residents at an apartment complex run by the County Housing Authority. So far, she says, nothing has changed.
So what happened now? We up here holding them accountable.
What do we want?
Action!
When do we want it?
Now!
Brown was part of a small group to rally outside HUD offices. Others, former tenants of Atlanta's Forest Cove, condemned for poor conditions, say it's been near impossible to find housing in the city as Georgia's affordable housing crisis continues. Meanwhile, a new law went into effect this summer, mandating Georgia landlords keep housing, quote, fit for human habitation. Bambi Hayes Brown, also from Albany, says she and others will keep advocating for the hundreds of tenants waiting on inspections.
When you don't have stable housing or healthy housing, it affects all other factors. It affects health, it affects education, it affects jobs.
For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis in Atlanta.
Historical preservationists in Macon have announced their annual list of important buildings in need of intensive care. GPB's Grant Blankenship has more.
The preservation group Historic Macon calls their list the Fading Five. Four buildings have rolled over from last year. They include a former bank with Art Deco details, a World War II-era Quonset hut turned nightclub where a teenaged Otis Redding once performed, and an old dentist's office at the heart of Cotton Avenue, Macon's black business district during segregation. New for this year is the Hillier-Kernighan House, designed by renowned architect Neil Reed and one-time home of the founding director of the Atlanta Reserve Bank. Nathan Lott is the executive director of Historic Macon. He says caring for the city's constructed history is vital for its health.
Macon Bibb cannot prosper if our older neighborhoods at the heart of our city are in decline.
Historic Macon seeks investors or even buyers with whom to collaborate in saving the buildings on their Fading Five list. For GPB News, I'm Grant Blankenship in Macon.
State court judges have disqualified presidential candidates Cornel West and Claudia De La Cruz from running for president in Georgia. In a ruling yesterday, the judges said the pair's electors didn't file the proper paperwork, even if their names remain on ballots. Spokespersons for West and De La Cruz say they would appeal the decision to the Georgia Supreme Court. Ratepayers and advocacy groups spoke out today against a Georgia Power proposal to use more biomass to generate energy. The State Public Service Commission is considering Georgia Power's application to add 80 megawatts of biomass fuel generation in the next couple of years. Biomass is energy produced from plant or animal waste. Mature trees are a common source of biomass fuel. At a meeting of the PSC's Energy Committee, opponents described biomass as an expensive source of pollution. Retired physician Eric Mintz says soot from burning biomass can trigger asthma, heart attacks, strokes, and death.
Biomass plants produce electricity and deadly air pollution. Solar power plants produce only electricity. On health grounds alone, the choice is clear.
The biomass projects were included in Georgia Power's 2022 Integrated Resource Plan, which requires Georgia Power to seek bids to develop up to 140 megawatts of biomass. Award-winning Georgia novelist, journalist, and publisher Tina McElroy Ansa has died. The coroner in Southeast Georgia's Glynn County confirmed she died on Tuesday. Numerous social media posts mourning her passing circulated yesterday. One, shared by Savannah writer Wanda Lloyd, showed a smiling Ansa at the Savannah rally for Vice President Kamala Harris 2 weeks ago. Respected in literary circles, Ansa wrote more than 10 books and contributed to numerous publications and broadcast media. She was known for her writing's profound sense of place, often focusing on the African-American experience in the South. Born in Macon and first published in Atlanta, she made St. Simon's Island on Georgia's coast her home since 1978. No cause of death has been reported. Tina McElroy Ansa was 74 years old. The annual Okmulgee Indigenous Celebration is taking place this week in Macon. The event is centered around the Okmulgee Mounds National Historic Park and represents a homecoming for citizens of the Muscogee Nation of Oklahoma. Art, film, and theater are now a large part of the celebration, too. This year, that includes a one-woman play by Cherokee attorney and playwright Mary Catherine Nagel. GPB's Grant Blankenship spoke with Nagel about her production.
Let's start with the title of the play. It's called On the Far End. Where does that name come from? What does it mean?
Yeah, that is the first four words of Justice Gorsuch's decision in McGirt versus Oklahoma. And the play is really a love letter to that decision from the perspective of Jean Hill Chowdhury, a Muscogee woman, activist, and playwright. McGirt kind of frames the entire play, and that's where the title comes from.
McGirt, as I understand it, it's a landmark Supreme Court case of recent years. One of the things it did, among many, is it sort of reestablished firm borders to what had been promised as reservation land to various tribes in Oklahoma. That's the start. But what else? Why else is McGirt so important right now?
I think it's important because oftentimes, whether or not a tribal nation continues to exist or exercise its sovereignty is dependent on white expectations and white narratives of land, entitlement, power, law, and all these things. And what the decision really said was, you know, it's irrelevant if white Oklahomans or the current governor had in their mind this narrative or this idea that Muscogee Creek Nation's reservation no longer existed. It is still there. It was never disestablished. It was created by a treaty, and Congress has never taken action to disestablish it, so it still exists. And so it was a moment where the law trumped, I guess, white expectations of entitlement is what I would say.
And that was the thing that Neil Gorsuch was saying in his opinion, right? That on the far end of the Trail of Tears, right? There was a promise, and that promise needs to be kept.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what is it about Jean Hill Chaudhry's life that makes her just one person you could pluck out of this, you know, intergenerational story to make sense of this for us?
I think she's a miracle worker and a healer and a brilliant woman who I admire deeply. She was born on the far end, and she survived at a time when they were really still trying to eliminate and eradicate Muscogee people and the Muscogee Nation entirely. She was forcibly taken from her home by the BIA and sent to one of the Indian boarding schools that was open at the time. And she ran away 8 times, was chased by dogs, beaten. And, you know, on the 8th time, finally made it all the way home on her own. She was like 10 years old, running 54 miles at night. in her adulthood, she led a life of advocacy and activism where she advocated on many, many, many critical issues important to Native people everywhere. You know, I think that in many cases, this victory for Muscogee Creek Nation today was made possible by generations of Muscogee women like Jean, who kept fighting for the rights of their children and grandchildren and the next generation to come.
Mary Catherine Nagle will perform her one-person play On the Far End Friday night at Theater Macon as part of the Okmulgee Indigenous Celebration. I just thank you so much for talking to me today.
It was a pleasure. Mado.
I'm Grant Blankenship, and this is GPB.
A government investigation has found that the president of the Atlanta Federal Reserve violated several of the central bank's ethics policies. The violations by Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic stem from his securities trades and investments and created the appearance that he acted on confidential Fed information and had a conflict of interest. That's according to the Fed's Office of Inspector General in a report issued yesterday. The report, however, concluded Bostic did not violate any insider trading or conflict of interest laws. A Georgia baker has been named among 13 best new chefs in Food & Wine's latest annual selection. On Tuesday, the magazine recognized Erica Council, founder and chef of Atlanta's Bomb Biscuits, for, quote, towering and tender biscuits that it called the best in the South. In sports, in baseball, the Washington Nationals beat the Atlanta Braves 5-1 yesterday. Atlanta starter Max Fried kept his team close, but the Braves only had 6 hits and fell 1 game behind the Mets in the race for the third NL wild card. Fried allowed 4 runs on 11 hits over 6 innings, striking out 6 and walking none with 1 hit batter. The Braves have the day off today before opening a 4-game series against the Los Angeles Dodgers at Truist Park tomorrow. And that's a wrap on this edition of Georgia Today. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you want to learn more about any of these stories, visit gpb.org/news. And if you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, take a moment and do it now. That'll keep us current in your podcast feed. If you've got feedback, we would love to hear from you. Send us an email. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.